You are listening to the Doug Hagman Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagman.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the East. Welcome to Hagman. It's the Doug Hagman Investigative Hour for today, Friday, April 20th, 2018. I want to thank everyone for joining me. Thank you so much for your belief and your trust in me, this program, this show. And please, if you tune in, please spread it on your social networking sites. Again, I want to thank the fine investigative journalists, investigators from Reddit and other such sites. You guys are doing a fantastic job. It is day 446 of the Donald Trump presidency. With that comes day 338 of the attempt to, well, the coup attempt against Donald Trump. Day 338 of the special counsel of Mueller. Yeah, imagine that, huh? Imagine 338 out of 446 days where you're constantly being investigated, prodded, probed, everything is going, everyone is working against you. And that is the coup that we are seeing here in America. And the coup I often talk about that dominates this show, because really at the end of the day, there's nothing really more important in my view than that. You know, some of the headlines. Look, you've got, we had Laura Loomer on our flagship show last night. Laura Loomer, of course, making headlines, the talk of Rush Limbaugh to Sean Hannity, to everyone, really, when she addressed Comey at a book signing in New York City. And asked basically about the 11 congressmen who are making a criminal referral about Comey. And then you've got the Comey memos released. James Comey saying that Eric Holder is smarter and more sophisticated and smoother than Loretta Lynch. You got a lot of really wow stuff in these memos. A couple of things about the memos, in case you're wondering. Let's just take a quick gander at these while we've got them. Daily Wire had a number of points that you need to know about the Comey memos. On Thursday, the contemporaneous memos written by the former director of the FBI, that oh-so-stellar James Comey, yeah, regarding meetings with President Trump, were revealed to Congress, and within minutes they were leaked to the media. And there wasn't much in these memos. We hadn't already heard from Comey, of course, but here are a couple of things. Number one, Comey leaked the memos with specific intent to prompt a special counsel in the first place. We knew that. Again, we know this, but this just confirms what we already knew. Once Comey was fired, he leaked the memos to a close friend so that the press would see him, intending to prompt a special counsel investigation into his firing. The theory was that the memos showed that Comey was hot on Trump's trail in the Russia investigation, and that Trump fired Comey to obstruct justice. Comey himself told the Senate Intelligence Committee back in June 2017, yeah, I asked a friend to share the content of the memo with a reporter. I didn't do so myself for a variety of reasons, but I asked him because I thought it might prompt the appointment of a special counsel. Yeah, okay. And when you see the animus against Donald Trump in these memos, there is this vitriolic, I will say a supernatural hatred against Donald Trump, but against all things American. The letter from the Department of Justice to Congress suggests that portions of the memos, the papers, were indeed classified. Now, Comey said, "Nah, I didn't break any laws by showing the memo to a third party because they were unclassified personal recollections." But the letter from the Department of Justice to Congress states that, well, there's redacted and unredacted portions. So the redactions suggest classified information. So what's that all about? And the bottom line, nothing in the memo suggests any type of collusion, obstruction, or whatever. What else can you say? And Comey defended McCabe repeatedly, by the way. He defended his deputy FBI director, Andy McCabe, from attacks by Donald Trump, said that McCabe was professional. Now McCabe may be indicted. That's right, indicted for criminal activity for leaking material to the press without Comey's permission or say-so. This is a he-said kind of scenario, right? But nonetheless, the Comey v. McCabe is interesting. McCabe faces criminal charges. One must wonder, is Hillary Clinton going to be on that list as well? Okay. You know, there you go. And Comey, by the way, told President Donald Trump that CNN was looking for a news hook to publish the hoax dossier. Now, I'm not going to get into all of this. By the way, I'm leaving for Canton, Ohio later this morning for the Occupy 2018 conference, where myself, Joe, and John Robertson will be speaking independently at Occupy 2018. Boy, would love to see you there if you can make it. That's Occupy 2018, Canton, Ohio. Come on down if you can. If you're within a half a day's drive or a day's drive. Look, I don't know if there are tickets left. I was speaking to Coach Dave Dobmeier yesterday, and he said, look, you come, we'll get you in. So, there you go. MS-13 within the United States. Just looking at a couple of important headlines here. There's a lot of MS-13 activity as a result of Obama, of course, and really all of the globalists, this globalist mentality. But there is this new initiative by MS-13 we need to be paying attention to and looking out for. It was reported in the New York Post. MS-13 directs its members to take out a cop. This from yesterday. It's a directive that has police on high alert across the New York area. Now, if you've been to Long Island lately, you will know. My goodness, you will know. Hempstead, for example. Just the violence from MS-13. It's beyond incredible. And to have federal judges attempting to stifle the attempts of Donald Trump, it's to me, you got people like Cuomo and federal judges working in concert with one another to stifle the security and safety, or to stifle the attempts of Donald Trump to keep America secure and safe. But here's the thing, and I'm going to lead off with this, I want to address this. I'm going to pull the lens back, and I think it's important that we do so. We could talk about the individuals. We could talk about the Sally Yates and the Comeys and the McCabes and all of that. But folks, let me pull the lens back here, because I think a bit of perspective is required today. I had mentioned that today is day 446 of the Donald Trump presidency. I had mentioned that. What I'd like everyone to do listening to this program is to take stock in the fact that we have lived through and continue to witness an attempted coup against Donald Trump, the president of the United States, as I've said many, many, many times on this program. But it's a coup against the American people as well. It's a coup not just against Donald Trump, but against a way of life. Election Day 2016. Inauguration 2017. Van Jones called it a white lash. Now, this was a whiplash, and the whiplash was caused from this hell-bent lack of law and order, lack of morals, lack of everything good that existed here in the United States, the lawlessness under the Obama regime, and the criminality under the Obama regime, along with Hillary Clinton. It was a whiplash back to this law and order. But I want you to consider, when we talk about this, the coup, in my view, it officially began on Election Day 2016. but arguably existed in the days and weeks and months leading up to that very momentous day and continues right now through the present. You see, the coup is playing out. What we're seeing is it's playing out on multiple battlefronts. Most arguably, the most visible part of the coup is by a weaponized FBI, by a weaponized Department of Justice, by the overt actions of the special counsel, by Robert Mueller and his staff. That's arguably the most visible, the most overt. But consider that the 446 days that Donald Trump has been or duly elected president, again, consider that you're looking at, 337 days, whatever it is, a large portion of that. Now, remember, I had spoken of and had on the program interviewed Diana West, just a tremendous author of American Betrayal. To cite her in part, evidence strongly indicates that a subversive effort was mounted from inside the U.S. government by deep state, by the deep state, under Barack Hussein Obama. Now, from within the government, this coup lies directly at the feet of Obama. This is Obamagate. This is not just merely deep state. This is Obamagate. This is Obama-directed, Obama-facilitated, Obama-approved operations against Donald Trump and ultimately against the will of the American people. And then there's the coup from outside the U.S. government by entities including the Hillary Clinton campaign, the DNC, their law firm, as well as their law firm Perkins Coie, in my view. Plotters include the multiple members of the former Obama White House, the intelligence community, Justice Department officials, some who continue to serve today in the Trump administration. So pull the lens out a little bit and let's take a look at this. This same effort has international dimensions as well, encompassing elements of British and Russian intelligence coordinated through the opposition research firm of Fusion GPS, for example, which almost looks like this intelligence agency by itself, and whose own services include open conduits into the media, some of them paid. Without a doubt, there are still unknown players that are yet to be identified. These players in a dimly seen cast of masterminds and dupes, strategists and foot soldiers. Now, identifying the coup plotters, that's one thing. We do that. Explaining where we stand now, we kind of have a good understanding. You do. I know you do. But how about this? How about maybe addressing something that really no one else is talking about? Even those who are talking about this, no one else is talking about. I'm asking you to think bigger and think beyond the political coup, the political machinations, because there is another driving force behind these events. Just to be clear, what we've seen and what we're currently witnessing is not all and only about an operation to secure the presidency for Hillary Clinton. Can you imagine? I mean, consider the fact that elections and elected officials come and go every 2 or 4 years, and you've got to ask yourself, in light of what we're seeing and what we've seen, is it really only about politics? Is it possible that it's only about Hillary Clinton? That so many career officials would risk everything just for one person, Hillary Clinton, and engage in activities, and I've said this before, in what we may one day acknowledge are potential capital crimes of treason? And I cite Diana West in this. Washington runs on revolving doors of elections. They come and go. Politicians come and go. Mostly stay. But all that any defeated globalist had to do basically was wait a couple of years or 4 years. Really, it's just a blink of an eye in terms of D.C. time. And things could change. But this is not politics as usual. And again, few people who talk about this are talking about this. So what am I talking about? It's my contention that this is about much more than politics. It's a perverse and even satanic ideology that is only disguised as politics that's driving, that is the driving force behind the coup that we're witnessing today. What we're seeing has been years, decades, and even the better part of a century, and maybe even centuries in the making. It's rooted in biblical history. Like it or not, believer or not, it's rooted in biblical history. It involves coordinated and sustained attacks against our moral, cultural, and Christian heritage. It involves most of the social, cultural, political, and spiritual memes or narratives we see, we hear, we read. Now, look, I can all day long cite and explain the political coup and present evidence and evidence after evidence after evidence of criminal conspiracy and wrongdoing. I could provide you with timelines. But you know what? I would be doing you a disservice by stopping there. You need to see and understand the complete and entire picture in order to make sense of what we're seeing today. That's my view. And I mentioned the Bible. This goes back to Babylon. The fight between good and evil. But what about today? What about more modern times? Look, in more modern times, we were warned, weren't we, about what we're seeing today? Go back to January 17th, 1961. Then President of the United States and five-star general of World War II, Dwight David Eisenhower, he gave his infamous farewell address to the nation that contained a veiled warning of sorts, the mention of the military-industrial complex. Do you remember this? Of course you do. January 17th, 1961. And just to quote him briefly, the speech is, I think, maybe close to 3,000 words, but just to really quote several sentences here, kind of the most oft-quoted part of this. This conjunction, now I'm quoting from his farewell address, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, and even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office, and of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. Now, this is the part that you're going to be very familiar with. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic process. We should take nothing for granted. This is key again. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals so that security and liberty may prosper together. All right, so that's excerpted from Dwight Eisenhower's speech, the infamous military-industrial complex. But I contend, I offer you something more. I contend, I would like to add to that, it's not just the military-industrial complex, it's the military-industrial political complex. Lest you think I'm being redundant here or unnecessary hyperbolic, I ask that you consider that we're looking at the weaponization today of the Department of Justice and the FBI through the political system. That's why I would add that in there. And there's also the scientific, military-industrial scientific complex as well, you're familiar with, I'm sure. That was referenced within that farewell speech. But less than 3 years after Eisenhower's warning, our nation bore witness to a very visible coup, the assassination of John F. Kennedy, who I would argue by today's standards would be considered a moderate Republican in terms of his political leanings and beliefs and biases. Compare that to today, right? And then, again, this walkthrough, just brief walkthrough of history. From there, we endured the administration of Lyndon Baines Johnson in his implementation of the Great Society, the forerunner to Barack Hussein Obama's fundamental transformation of America. Now, just briefly, what did Johnson do briefly? He brought us an expansion, an explosion of the welfare state. He played into the war machine in Vietnam that led to the deaths of over 58,000 American soldiers. His social engineering to control millions of Americans has squandered billions of our dollars, tax dollars, over decades. And arguably locked us into intergenerational poverty through this Great Society and his Great Society programs. These safety nets that were supposedly created by Johnson, they became hammocks. Not safety nets, but hammocks. Did you notice that during this time? The older you get, the more you notice patterns and such, but during this time, there were massive attacks on our culture back in the 60s. Johnson's war on poverty, by the way, that resulted in the genocide of black babies to abortion. I'm sure I'm going to get emails on this. What are you talking about? The incarceration of one out of every five black men and the destruction of the black family. Research this, study this, and it's interesting when I'm looking at the events of today, following the evidence trails, this is what I'm finding. And then from there, we had Nixon, then Carter, then Reagan, then George H.W. Bush, followed by the Clinton co-presidency, then George W. Bush, the penultimate globalist from a globalist family who gave us, ultimately, Barack Hussein Obama, with the intent of giving us Hillary Clinton. But when you look at the timelines, you look at the political machinations, the people, the deep research, it will take you and takes us back to a few golden threads interwoven throughout history. It doesn't matter how far back you go or how much in modern times you stay, there they are. When assessing where we are at today in this deep state coup, you got to recognize that the infrastructure for what we're seeing today was done especially during the 20th century and throughout today. That infrastructure was built throughout the 20th century into today. And as I have been researching the current deep state coup, I kept following the trail of evidence that led me back to a period of history, at least in modern times, or relatively modern times, in the course of human history. It led me back to World War II and the post-war era. And this is where Diana West has done a great job, and this is where I started learning that I found that the scandal that we know, the criminal scandal or the crime that we know of, is Uranium One. Look, it had a predecessor. Did you know that? It was a lend-lease program engineered by Franklin Roosevelt with the Russians. Go back and look at what we did for them in our relationship during World War II. And I don't know if, you know what? I don't know if this is being taught at schools. I sense it's probably frowned upon. But FDR struck up a deal with the Russians. We gave them not just war supplies during the war and post-war supplies after the war, but we also gave them chemical materials and supplies that included uranium at the expense of the United States. Again, remember, we were on the side of the Russians during World War II, fighting the Nazi fascists. Consider this. We developed the atomic bomb under the highest security classifications and secrecy. So how is it, did you ever think about this? How is it that during that same decade, the Russians supposedly developed on their own their program and their atomic bomb just a few short years later? There's no coincidence here, but it shows a working relationship between the former Soviet Union, the communists, and the United States, specifically under FDR. Oh, and by the way, Truman looked the other way. Additionally, and of equal importance, this is also the result of communist infiltration that existed in the post-World War II era. Now, this infiltration was first identified by the House Un-American Activities Committee under Martin Dees, and then by Joseph McCarthy. And you know the story about Joe McCarthy. Of course, McCarthyism, that pejorative term, incorrectly pejorative because he was correct. And the conflating between the confusion and conflation between the House Un-American Activities Committee and Joe McCarthy. But I would sit here and contend that this is the period, I believe, that set the stage for the events that we're seeing today. Communism, especially Soviet-style communism and pro-Stalinist, this Marxist ideology, but communism itself, is the ideology behind a one-world government, a one-world order. It's that golden thread that embodies a hatred of our nation, a hatred of our Judeo-Christian values, and a hatred of God, the God of the Bible. When you look back at this period in history, proven Soviet communist pro-Stalinist infiltration into the American government was rife. Absolutely rife. And, as I go through and look at history, just to see this take place and to understand that all of this is rooted in communism and how communism has now, and Marxism has now, this Marxist is merged with the Muslims, this Marxist-Muslim agenda that we see embodied in the Awan scandal, the Awan criminal activity in Congress. And where do we see that primarily? And by the way, where do we see this communist agenda in Congress? You look at the Awan criminal activity, and obviously you see it's all on the Democratic side within Congress. And then you look at Congress in general, and you see this gigantic shift to the left, never so more illustrated by the Congressional Progressive Caucus, which is a membership organization within the Democratic Congressional Caucus in the United States, Congress. It is this progressive, left-leaning, pro-Stalinist, Marxist, communist organization that works to advance the communist ideology and represents that communist, and these are my words now, this communist faction of the Democratic Party. The Congressional Progressive Caucus, by the way, was founded in 1991. It's grown steadily since then, having recently added a number of members. I think there's a current number of 78 members right now. And it's currently the largest Democratic Congressional Congress. You should be very concerned about this. You know, setting the stage for what we see, too. I just want to go back to, I'd mentioned Johnson. And that great society. Think back to the immigration, the illegal, or the immigration reforms that accompanied that great society back then, and how that changed the demographics of our country. And if it seems like I'm trailing off onto different tangents, you know, listen to the end, because I think that I can make a good case before you, members of the jury, to say that this is really the culmination of a number of years in the planning and really adherent to a core Marxist-Muslim thread, a pro-Soviet thread. And if anyone is guilty of any collusion, which, what's that, or conspiring with the communist pro-Russia people, it would be the very people making the accusations against Donald Trump. Now, I had mentioned as well, and I want to throw this out here too. I want you to consider a couple of things. I had mentioned too that we're fighting this war on multiple fronts because and consider this, please. Consider how we are being attacked on multiple fronts. The attack on our morals and our culture and our heritage. How is that being accomplished? I found a piece written, you know what, I'm not even sure when it was or who it was, but I'll just give you the gist of it. Our language has been hijacked. We've spoken about this before. I've spoken about this before. It's nothing new. But consider, for example, how our language has been absolutely hijacked. Consider, you could go back a number of years and look, for example, at the diagnostic manuals and consider the transformation of our language. Now, I don't mean to be offensive at all when I'm saying this. I'm actually citing this from the DSM, the medical manuals here. Remember that we had specific words meant things. For example, you call someone an idiot, or it's when someone is labeled an idiot, that does have a legitimate meaning to it. According to the DSM, back a number of years ago, an idiot was defined as anyone having an IQ range of 0 to 25. If you had an IQ of anywhere between 26 and 50, you were known as an imbecile. I'm not making this up. 51 to 70 IQ points, you were labeled a moron. Then those terms became offensive, and then people were just known as retarded. Again, I'm citing from the manuals here, from the medical manuals. When that became offensive, then people, whether they were 0 to 25 in terms of their IQ or 26 to 50 or 50 to 71 IQ points, they became known as intellectually disabled, then mentally impaired, then intellectually challenged, culminating ultimately as special. Isn't that interesting how different meanings? And you might think, well, what does this have to do with anything? I'm getting to that. And many other examples too. Deaf became hearing impaired. Blind became vision impaired. Crippled became mobility impaired. Bums suddenly became the homeless. And gangs become youth groups. And jungles became rainforest. Impotents became ED. And prostitutes became sex workers. And homosexuals became gay, and abortion advocates pro-choice, and I could go on. Child abuse. Oh, yeah, this is a good one. Child abuse, intergenerational sex, or minor attracted person. Illegal aliens became illegal immigrants, then undocumented immigrants, then undocumented workers, and then in 2015, Obama referred to them as Americans in waiting. What does that have to do with anything? Look at the reports that are being issued about McCabe and others. Today, to lie is to lack candor. You see how our language is being manipulated? You're not lying, you're just lacking candor. But what I'm getting to is when I'm looking at the events of today, and again, pulling back that lens for an all-important kind of reassessment or an assessment of where we are today, how we got here, which is we can use to predict the future, basically, or anticipate the future. We've seen this proven Soviet communist pro-Stalinist infiltration into our American government. And you go back to, again, as I mentioned, post-World War II, Joe McCarthy was right, the House Un-American Activities Committee, and the creation of the United Nations, the spies among us, the infiltration of our State Department. Look back as well during World War II as the communists were working with the Muslims. What are we seeing today? We're seeing the same thing. And the ideology, though, the globalist ideology, the one world globalist government that everyone says, oh, it's debunked and discredited, and how dare you talk about it? You're nothing but a conspiracy theorist. Well, wait a second. It's mentioned several times. But the globalists themselves paved the way for 8 years of Barack Hussein Obama, who was a committed Marxist. There's no doubt about that. During his college years at Occidental College, there was a guy by the name of John Drew. He was the Marxist student leader at Occidental College. You know what he said? He said Obama was even more communistic than I was. That's what he said. Obama was even more communistic than the student leader of Marxism at Occidental College. He actually believed that Marx's prophetic revolution to overthrow capitalism was imminent in the United States. And consider the year. This is back in 1980, and this is Obama. Look, his father was a Marxist, depending on who you believe his father is. And frankly, the jury's still out on that. We don't know. His mentor, Frank Marshall Davis, was a card-carrying member of the Communist Party USA. And for those purists out there, his card number was 47544. And Obama kicked off his political career, don't forget, in the living room of Bill Ayers, the founder of the Weather Underground. And his pastor, his personal spiritual guide, was Jeremiah Wright, the purveyor of black liberation theology. And then look at his appointments, the White House communications director, Anita Dunn, who considered Chairman Mao as one of our favorite political philosophers. And Van Jones, who founded, who was temporarily or briefly the Green Jobs Czar, who founded the communist group STORM, standing together to organize a revolutionary movement. Dark utopian philosophies. And you know, talking about language being hijacked, you've got socialism, just the very word socialism or the word communism being replaced by words like fairness or redistribution, progressivism. Again, consider the transformation of our language. Today, to lie is to lack candor. Okay, you go back to Obama and Cloward and Piven. Consider the Cloward and Piven strategy, which Obama embraced. The reason I'm bringing this up, again, the wide-angle view of where we are today. And as I'm talking, picture in the back of your mind the cloud yellers, the snowflakes that were yelling at the sky on Inauguration Day. And people say, well, why is that? Why the visceral hatred of Donald Trump? Why the visceral hatred of you and I? Well, this is part of it because Obama bred this and Obama was adherent to the Cloward and Piven strategy. And what did that bring us? The implementation of Cloward and Piven, for example, in New York City alone, from 1965 to 1974, the number of single-parent households on welfare soared from 4.3 to 10.8 million. But by the early 1970s, one person was on welfare for every two working in the private sector. And oh, by the way, in 1975, New York City declared bankruptcy. All right. Pull the lens out away from New York City. Look at, for example, illegal immigration. Or as Obama would like to call it, Americans in waiting. In Texas alone, during the first 6 years under Obama, illegal aliens were convicted of committing 640,000 crimes, including over 3,000 homicides. Now, why did I bring this up at this point, or why did I talk about this? Going back to what I said initially, you know, these leaders, deluded leaders, can be replaced, they can be voted out in our nation, but a deluded populace can't. And what do we have? A deluded populace. So here we sit at one of the most important, significant times in our history. We are seeing a coup taking place. And of course, we see the obligatory, laughably, chillingly funny, I suppose, YouTube videos of, you know, by Mark Dice or others, or I'm trying to think who does the videos where they ask students questions and they couldn't locate you know, America on a map. They couldn't identify the vice president of the United States. I mean, it's just that bad. So when you look at what's going on right now, we have been primed for this moment. We have been led to this moment in time through consistent, constant attacks by the liberal fascists, but by the communist, by the communist utopians who are attempting to convince the population that communism is utopia, socialism, sharing, you know, that kind of stuff. Look at Colbert and Jimmy Kimmel, all these late night comedians who really twist things and attempt to make you believe in the sanctity or in the usefulness or even the glory of a communist or socialist society. And you wonder why Mueller is still there. You wonder why that, not you, but people, you know, people, why isn't anything happening? Why are we still under this sustained assault? It's a combination of things, not the least of which is this assault against our morals, our language, against all aspects of our life. So pull out the lens a little bit to get a good feel as to what's going on. You know, I got an email yesterday saying that, boy, your program ended rather abruptly. And by the way, if I sound different, I just made an adjustment on my microphone. You ended abruptly talking about the mainstream media attacks against Donald Trump and killing the deep state by Dr. Jerome Corsi. The hard left or the progressive fascist manipulation of the mainstream media, and that involving more than a shared ideological worldview. Okay, mirroring the hard left, the mainstream media favors this statist view of politics that seeks to extend massive government regulation over every aspect of life. And I had spoken about people such as David Brock, Media Matters, who declared war on Donald Trump. And I mentioned the book titled Media Matters, the top watchdog against fake news and propaganda transforming the media landscape. And Brock published this book back in January 2017 to solicit donors for what he termed as the Media Matters for America 2020, that plan. And he talked about his intention to declare war on Trump's ability to rule. So what do we see? We see that taking place today. Can he rule unfettered? No. He's being sued at every turn. He's being fought by neocons and globalists and everyone else, and the usual suspects as well. Brock, by the way, and I'm not sure if I mentioned this yesterday or not, and this again, citing Dr. Corsi, was among the first to coin conservative disinformation as fake news in an attempt to launch a meme or narrative designed to target reporters and pundits in the news media that dare publish conservative views. Period. In the competitive analysis section, as I mentioned yesterday, he singles out, that's David Brock, the Conservative Media Research Center, for applying an $18 million annual operating budget to the goal of working closely with establishment right-wing media to reinforce the myth of a liberally biased media. Yeah, that's right. It's a myth, right? No, not so much. Then he attacked Breitbart for having received millions of dollars in funding from extremist billionaires close to the Trump administration. And again, notice the words here. And notice, too, how Laura Loomer was described in media reports, this right-wing activist, this fringe person, all right? This is what's taking place, and we have to factor this in as we look at the, not just the who, you know, not just the who and what, or not just the people and players, we have to factor in the playbook itself. The nexus point, I'm going to stay with Brock for a second, because Brock is also creating a narrative, adding to the meme that the alt-right, which is another term created by Brock and the hard left to attack conservatives, were haters, were characterized as white nationalists and anti-Semites and misogynists. And I had mentioned this yesterday. Again, I kind of ran out of time. I don't want to do that now, because this is critical for people to understand. The top outcomes section of that briefing book written by David Brock, Media Matters, it lays out his goals for the coming 4 years or the 4 years of the Trump administration. Now consider this. Serial misinformers and right-wing propagandists inhibiting everything from social media to the highest levels of government will be exposed. Okay. Internet and social media platforms like Google and Facebook will no longer uncritically and without consequence host and enrich fake news sites and propagandists. You want to know who's behind the censorship? Well, there's one right here. Toxic alt-right social media-fueled harassment campaigns that silence dissent and poison our national discourse will be punished and halted. Wait a minute. Who's silencing who? It was 6 days after Donald Trump was elected president that the New York Times reported that Google had announced this policy that would ban websites that peddle fake news, okay, from using its online advertising service. And then just right after that, Facebook updated the language in its Facebook Audience Network policy, amending it to specify that Facebook will not display ads in sites that show misleading or illegal content, including fake news sites. But who determines that? Obviously, the Southern Poverty Law Center and others. You know, and you may say, well, we know this. But look at this in the larger sense as we put this mosaic together. Look at who's behind all of this. Media Matters in November launched a campaign pressuring Facebook to acknowledge the problem of the proliferation of fake news on Facebook and its consequences for our democracy, interesting title or interesting word, and committed to take action to fix the problem. This, according to the Media Matters briefing book. As a result of their push for accountability, Brock was happy to report Facebook was responsive. And here we are today with that, little dangling, little man-child testifying before Congress. And then look at what happened with Soros. He muscled Glenn Beck from Fox News, Pat Buchanan from MSNBC, Lou Dobbs from CNN. And people like Brock, they've learned from Soros how to use economic clout to push prominent conservative and libertarian personalities off cable news. Look at what happened, unsuccessfully, but look at what happened with Laura Ingraham recently. This strategy Soros began pursuing in advance of Obama's 2012 re-election campaign, it worked then, and they're trying it now. By the way, there was a hack of documents of the Soros Institute, Open Society Foundation. Did you know that? Posted and spread via WikiLeaks that explicitly discussed the Open Society Foundation's funding various organizations to run an activist campaign aimed at ousting Beck, for example, from Fox News, Pat Buchanan from MSNBC, Lou Dobbs from CNN. Done deal. There was a memorandum dated March 27th of 2012. The head of Soros' Democracy Fund, a guy by the name of Bill Vandenberg, discussed a two-year, $600,000 grant to support the Color of Change that was targeted to allow organizations, or the organization, to hold media companies accountable for derogatory actions, including successful campaigns against the aforementioned people, the people I just mentioned. This is all about censorship, not about censorship of profanity, not about censorship of terrorist activity, but censorship of information that it's not conducive to the communist ideology. So that's what I meant to finish yesterday. You know, look at the attacks against the conservatives. Look at the attacks against Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham. Look at the attacks against us. It's coming to you. It's important to understand this. And I want to make sure I added that in there, because that Brock component is important, because again, no one's really talking about this. No, nor is anyone talking about the larger issues as well. You know, I suppose if I was going to name this episode, in fact, I'm going to do this, Everywhere a Battlefield. Because everything that we are in which we are engaged today is a battle. It's a battle between good and evil. It's a battle between the communist / globalist progressive ideology, I don't like the word progressive, versus the conservative, moral, principled ideology. And Antifa in Austin, Texas, the Antifa movement, this self-described Marxist-Leninist Maoist collective that does bear a strong resemblance, by the way, to the Red Guards, a youthful student-based paramilitary social movement organized by Mao in communist China's cultural revolution back in the 60s. In an attempt to reinvigorate their communist revolution of the late 40s, many thousands of Chinese youth, and we need to understand this history, clad in military fatigues, roamed the streets of major cities during China's Cultural Revolution. These Red Guard activists closed universities, destroyed churches, disrupted events, burned libraries, tore down statues, tore down historical monuments. What have we seen? Everywhere a battlefield. The statue's being torn down. It's a battlefield. It's a communist agenda. That's the golden thread that runs through all of this. The coup. Again, instead of naming names, instead of going through the timeline, let's just look at the ideology. And it's a communist ideology. In Antifa, the much celebrated Antifa, it's communist in nature. You see the statues being torn down? Look familiar? And people, and these mopes in the United States, these young people and even some of the old people, they celebrate this. The Red Guard of China. The Red Guards in Austin, an Antifa group gaining prominence, openly advocates for violent revolution against capitalism. Everywhere a battlefield. You know, go back to September 7th, 2016. Hillary Clinton recorded on video making one of the most defining statements of her presidential campaign. The deplorables comment. You know, just to be grossly generalistic, you could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call a basket of deplorables. That's what she said. New York Times reported that. Okay, there was a combination of applause and laughter. And she continued by saying the racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name it. And unfortunately, there are people like that, and he has lifted them up. This is the ideology we're fighting. This encapsulates that ideology. With that pronouncement, Hillary Clinton made clear that the Marxist analysis of class conflict in the United States had moved from a 1930s focus championing the working people of the labor union movement to focusing on the oppressed as defined by leftist identity politics. The new victims were no longer working class poor, but women and people of color. The oppressors stayed the same, namely the imperialistic, capitalistic, colonialist, warmongering state is epitomized by white privilege or white males exercising the white privilege. And Antifa has embraced this Marxist shift. And everyone is targeting Donald Trump and you and I. Donald Trump as the fascist hater-in-chief and you and I as the deplorables. So when you look at this, let's look at the bigger picture here. Look at what's going on around us. Understand how big this is. This is bigger than all of us. And with that, please understand that we are in the fight of our lives. We are fighting against the deep state. The win is not going to be easy. The win is not going to be swift. I understand people are out there saying, when are we going to see arrests? When are we going to see the people in handcuffs and perp walked out of here? Man, I want that too. But when you understand how deeply rooted, and this is why I spent the time to go through, and everywhere a battlefield, and the multiple battles, and the assaults on our culture, moral heritage, everywhere a battlefield. The reason we're not seeing it move swiftly is because how deeply embedded this ideological rot is. So when you look at it in that respect, I think you will agree. Going back to, of course, Donald Trump being president just for 446 days. And of those 446 days, what, 338 days under the gun by Robert Mueller, fighting a formidable mainstream media who wants to oust Trump, President Donald Trump, and certainly overturn the will of the people, facilitating attacks against our Bill of Rights and all of our rights, attempting to censor us, to shut us down every day. And I think you understand how big the problem is. Everywhere a battlefield. Everywhere a battlefield. And in addition to that, I want to close with this quote from Marcus Tullius Cicero. A nation can survive its fools and even the ambitious, but it cannot survive treason from within. An enemy at the gates is less formidable, for he is known and carries his banner openly, but the traitor moves amongst those within the gate freely, his sly whispers rustling through all the alleys, heard in the very halls of government itself. For the traitor appears not a traitor. He speaks in accents familiar to his victims, and he wears the face in their arguments. He appeals to the baseness that lies deep in their hearts of all men. He rots the soul of a nation. With that, we've got to remain upright, fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting. We will prevail with God on our side. May God bless each and every one of you. Until next time, God bless.
The Doug Hagman Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagman Report. Tune in to The Hagman Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com.